The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome to this Friday afternoon's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. We're going to be looking back at International Week and looking forward to the playoffs. We know in the last few minutes that the Republic of Ireland will be away in the final playoff if they can navigate a game in Bratislava against Slovakia. Before that, they'll travel to either Northern Ireland or Bosnia-Herzegovina. We'll talk about that in a few moments' time. We're also welcoming the return of the Premier League as well and the return of the so-called Humble One Mark II. Jose Mourinho reckons he's a better manager now than he was when he lost his job at Manchester United last December. He takes his Spurs team to take on West Ham this weekend. We also have a pretty big fixture between Man City and Chelsea as well. Joining us today, we've got Phil the Chill Egan and the enigmatic End of Call as well.
The nicknames are getting better.
Yeah, I think he spends a lot of time on these.
Far too much time.
Yeah.
You guys research the games, I research a different nickname each week.
Okay.
It's a fair deal.
It's your wrestling background.
Yeah.
You love it. You love a good nickname.
We'll talk about the Republic of Ireland first, because I think we were kind of across the board last week. We thought this was going to be a draw. We were kind of predicting as well that Republic of Ireland and Mick McCarthy probably wouldn't be too unhappy to still have the chance across two games to qualify. But Enda, we know the path now, and it's two wins on the road would be required.
Yeah, Mick McCarthy won't have many arms left to bite off if he keeps chewing them off every time he gets a fixture. But Slovakia away, I'm not overly worried about that, to be honest. I was looking at their results and looking through a bit of their squad as well, and they don't look like world beaters. I know it's a difficult place to go. And
there's an alarm bell going off in my head right now that you're writing them off.
Well, I'm not writing them off, but anytime you go to Central to Eastern Europe, it's a tough place to go, and it's going to be no different for that. But if you look at Ireland's history in the playoffs, I mean, Bosnia was a harder place to go a few years back, and they went and got a result there. So if you look through the Slovakian squad, I mean, you're looking at players who are playing for Zenit, some of them are playing in Slovakia, Real Salt Lake, Celta Vigo, who are in 18th in La Liga. So defensively they're strong. They've got Skinner, who starts for Inter Milan, and Vavro, who's Lazio's starting centre half as well. So
do you reckon that on the Slovakian version of Off the Ball right now, they're looking at the Irish team and going, well, their left winger plays for the team in the relegation zone in the Championship?
Yeah, You're probably right there.
We need to hook up with these guys.
That's probably fair enough.
But I wonder what it's called.
yeah, I just think that Ireland will have enough to get back past Slovakia, but if they're meeting Northern Ireland in the final in Windsor Park, that's going to be a much tougher fixture.
Phil, what was your reaction, first of all, to the draw and that it would be two away, one-legged games for Ireland?
I think we need to put this into context, that Ireland won one game away from home in the group, and that was against Gibraltar, and it was awful. It was like, there was even a moment when Darren Randolph had to pull off an unbelievable save, and I know it was Mick McCarthy's first game back in a second reign, and he was almost given a bit of a free pass for that reason. But as the group played out, we weren't very good away from home. We got one good result where we drew away to Denmark, but it's very hard to look that far ahead because we don't know what kind of shape our team will be in come March in terms of injuries, what kind of game time they've got, where they are with their clubs. Some could be in relegation battles, some in the Championship could be chasing promotion. And as I said, if there's players that are not getting regular football, then it's obviously not ideal. And Slovakia are in the same boat as well. And it's something Mick McCarthy said after the game on Monday night against Denmark. He said, you know, the performance against Denmark, which was an improvement from what we have seen, but it was always going to be an improvement because the bar was pretty low. But Mick said after the game, you know, these lads will go back to their clubs and play away, so tonight's performance, as he referenced Monday night, will have no bearing on what happens in March. And there was good performances. Matt Doherty, which, you know, he said himself was at fault for the goal, but he scores. Enda Stevens had a good game. McGoldrick again showed that he's key to us now. But there are still players in there that aren't performing, but they're still getting picked. So the message there is keep playing badly and you still get your game. So that worries me.
As well, Enda, the performance I thought was overall pretty good. It was a lot better after Ireland went 1-0 down. It was almost like, and this happens so regularly with this team, it's like a switch is flipped and Ireland go into a much more kind of attacking style of football when they go behind. Is that just down to kind of the mentality, or what's the reason why that seems to happen?
Well, they were playing quite good before that as well. They were on top before that goal went in. It was against the run of play that that Denmark actually scored, but
they played with much more purpose.
They went for the game when they needed to, and it's more. I don't think it's more a case of us going behind. It's more that when we need a result, we chase after that result and go get it. It was the same when we had the reverse fixture in Denmark, when we put Shane Duffy up as an out-and-out striker, essentially. So. And we spoke about this before the game, that it's just such a frustration for an Irish fan and for spectators of Ireland that they can't put these performances in when they're not needed. Like when we were going away to Georgia, why didn't they play like that and try get a result, try press the issue and put themselves in the best possible position? And in a way, that's probably what's given me a little bit of optimism going into this game against Slovakia in March, is that Ireland can put in these performances when they need it, and the playoffs, you need a performance more than anything there. So it's going to be a long road to March. The one thing that's probably good for Mick McCarthy is he won't have the issue of the 21s by that stage. Like, he will be going with his team. People will not be questioning why he's not bringing in the likes of, say, Troy Parrott into the starting lineup. I can't see him bringing Jack Byrne into the team for the fixture in March either.
I thought he got the balancing act generally right on this window, though. He didn't play Troy Parrott on the Monday. Troy Parrott gets released to play for the 21s on the Tuesday. Leo Connor gets plenty of game time on the Thursday, knowing that he was suspended and that he'd go back into the under 21 team. It worked pretty smoothly this window.
Well, for example, after this game, people were saying, why didn't you bring in Jack Byrne to try bring in that little bit of flair, that little last pass in the final third? But in March next year, the League of Ireland will only be a month into its season. So Jack Byrne will still be kind of winter zone. So
he might not be at Rovers.
If he's still at Rovers at that stage, he won't be in contention for the Ireland squad, I wouldn't say so. So he'll be able to pick his team without that much complaint from journalists.
I wonder actually who his final substitution would have been had John Egan not got injured and had to come off at half time, because Kieran Clarke had to come on, which takes away a chance for
an attacking base substitution.
I wouldn't have seen it as Jack Byrne. I don't think Mick trusts him enough to bring him on in this type of game, and it was a physical game. There wasn't a lot of space, but I still think he would have been the one to make a difference. I don't know whether that's me just with my League of Ireland cap on or not, but
I was chatting to Shane Supple last weekend about Byrne, because Byrne had a pretty decent game on Thursday against New Zealand. He was a bit of a kind of a metronome. He was making things happen with the ball as well. And even Shane, as the League of Ireland aficionado like yourself, said that it is a big step up in quality for Jack Byrne to go from a sub appearance against Bulgaria, a bit of game time against New Zealand, who were very rusty going into that match, to then playing against Denmark. Yeah. That really it's a case of him having to be eased in, probably.
Yeah, the only counter argument I would offer to that is, what would Jack Byrne not offer that Jeff Hendrick was offering at a number 10? Mm. And I don't think there's anything. Jack Byrne wants the ball to his feet, demands it to his feet, takes the ball on the turn, which is just something. It doesn't make sense that Irish midfielders aren't doing that. Or just turn your body a little bit, turn it 45 degrees and open up the play a little bit. Jeff Hendrick was too often getting
the ball. Jeff Hendrick not one of those players that Phil's already mentioned that is maybe coasting by and what he's done previously in a green shirt, that his form has not been good for a while for Ireland?
I think he has improved under Mick. He definitely is a step up from the player that was playing under Martin O'Neill, but my biggest issue with him was when he was drifting into that number 10 role, and I know the ball into him wasn't great, but he was getting the ball in his chest, and the touch was taking him 5 yards back into the centre of midfield where the pressure was, so it was doing the opposite of what we need as a number 10, and Jack Byrne offers that. But again, it is a big step up to international football.
Now we've got some hydration on board for you, Phil. Yeah. What's your thinking about Slovakia then? Is it simplistic looking at them as we did and said, right, this guy, they're playing down the leagues and so on, or are they a decent side for Ireland to face?
No, I think we can definitely beat them. And see, the thing is, we'll probably go with the approach of, you don't lose.
Safety
and,
first.
Yeah, and that's the way we've played throughout the whole campaign. And you talked about when we go a goal down, then we start to see a different performance, because you have to. So it's very much the approach has been, don't lose. And it was the same on Monday night. Don't lose the game. You can't win the game in the first half, but you can certainly lose it. And that's the way we approached it. And let's be honest, Denmark, that was their first shot on target, Braithwaite's goal. They turned up to get a draw.
Well, Kasper Schmeichel in afterwards, they were crap.
Yeah, that was the of all the six games we've played against them in the last 2 years, that was the worst performance. And there's a reason that, you know, they kind of feel like they're at the end now with Haraida and they're replacing him.
And it adds another asterisk onto Ireland's performance, how good it actually was, because Denmark were really poor.
They were. Like, the one thing I think we've improved on since Mick took over is the shape, and we're more organised. And we're more clued in, little things like set pieces, you know, attacking set pieces, also defending set pieces. We're a bit better drilled in that. But we're still playing with caution. And I imagine that's going to be the approach in March, where, you know, it's a one-off game. Don't lose it. Don't lose it. Worst case scenario, you go to extra time, you might have to
practice
penalties.
The penalties. Yeah.
So I presume we're still playing extra time, aren't we? I know extra time has been taken out in certain competitions.
But well, they could take it out at the click of the fingers, the way UEFA have set up these rules.
It's been really bizarre, the two days before the draw. I know it wasn't a warm ball for the Aviva Stadium for Ireland, potentially for a final, but the fact that UEFA changed their own rulings 48 hours before a draw was mental.
They can do this. They did that for the, well, it wasn't UEFA at the time, but FIFA did it in 2009 when they changed the seed and said it wasn't going to be seeded than it was the week before. So, I mean, they set it up so they have the teams that they want at the tournament. Not that they fix the draw, but they make it so that the best possible outcome for the teams that they want there can happen. Yeah.
The only thing with this time around is at least the Nations League teams were rewarded with a home draw in the semi-final. So if you did perform well in the Nations League, you can make whatever argument you want about whether, you know, teams in A, B and C deserve to be at home and so on. But at least there was some incentive for taking that seriously.
Yeah, which we obviously didn't.
Yeah.
And we're paying for it now. But look, as I said, I think March is a long time away. We don't know what kind of form players will be in. Aaron Connolly could be banging in goals for Brighton. Troy Parrott might have
be behind Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Well, no, he might hold talks to Jose Mourinho and realise I have to go out on loan, you know, like from January. So we don't know. I know the approach will be pretty similar, but just the personnel. And, you know, maybe Mick mightn't have to make that Seamus Coleman, Matt Doherty choice. That could be made for him. But looking at that fixture, and if Doherty and Coleman are both fit, that's going to be the question that he's going to be asked the most about that week.
Look, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more about Troy Parrott in a few minutes' time, because the Premier League is back this weekend. Of course, all our football coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. We're going to be talking about odds when we discuss the games over the next few minutes. For information on responsible gambling, check out dunlewy.net. And of course, keep your comments coming in across our social channels as well, Off the Ball. And you can watch us on YouTube, or if you want to listen just to the audio version, check out the new Go Loud app, where you can listen to us each Friday at noon as well. We're looking forward, of course, to the games in the Premier League, but are we looking forward to Jose Mourinho being back in the Premier League, Enda?
Yes.
Why?
He's box office, and some people are fed up with his whole routine. I love it. As long as he's not in charge of the team that
well,
you
that,
like.
That was going to be my next question.
He is absolute box office, and just the manner of which he goes about his press conferences. Look, I don't know if you did just watch his first press conference yesterday.
It was difficult to watch 40 minutes of men trying to get Jose Mourinho back on side yesterday. There were softball questions all over the place in that interview.
Yeah, like, it was a change in tune from the last,
was it,
was the
it
previous.
It wasn't. Because remember when he went to Manchester United, he was talking about the history of Manchester United and, you know, the
my dream job.
Alex Ferguson is my dream job and I've always wanted this. But he was saying all the right things then too.
He was. And the first year of Jose is always really fun. I'm not saying I'm going to enjoy it in 2 years' time, but I'm definitely going to enjoy it for the rest of the season.
It's interesting as well. It's the first time since 2002 that he's taken on a job during the season. Like, he's usually the man you get in summer, and he'll come in and he'll say, this is what I'm looking for before the season starts. So I don't expect much this season. I think there'll be an upturn. It's hard not to get an upturn if you've only won 3 of your first 12 games.
They have a nice run of fixtures coming here too.
They certainly do. But then next season there'll be a different proposition, and that's their chance, because if nothing happens next season, it'll just peter out and it'll end in tears. It'll end in tears regardless. That's just the way Jose does it. Even when he left Inter, technically it did end in tears because Materazzi was in tears when they waved goodbye in the tunnel.
But they had the treble and
they had the treble. Yeah.
Well, he did say in his press conference yesterday that he can't win the title this year, and he said that he's not. It may not happen next year, but
it could.
It could. And I would say the one difference between the United job and the Tottenham job is the squad of players. And it'll be really interesting to see the dynamic between them now that he's there. Will Alderweireld want to stay? Christian Eriksen looks to be out the gap regardless, and probably good because he's not the type of player that Jose likes.
Jose Mourinho, though, got the most out of Mesut Ozil, who doesn't play in a dissimilar position to Christian Eriksen at Real Madrid, though.
But he completely isolated him and made him... He does exactly the same at every club. There are certain players that he is much harder on, and he was exceptionally hard on Mesut Ozil.
You could argue, though, he got his probably the best season out of him that he's had in his career.
Yeah, but
he did.
He's playing for Real Madrid, and at that time, Real Madrid and Barca were so much more dominant than the other teams around them.
Mm.
So, and that's a long time ago. Like, football has moved on, and that's one of the criticisms of Mourinho, that his tactics haven't evolved. So you can imagine he's still going to approach the big games the same way, where he's going to sit in, but he actually has players at Spurs that can counterattack. Mm-hmm. Whether he can plug enough holes with that defence, you know, you look at the right back position's an issue. They've obviously moved Kyle Walker on, Kieran Trippier, they've got Serge Aurier. He strikes as a player Mourinho is not going to trust.
Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're looking at Moussa Sissoko playing as a right back. It's the kind of thing Mourinho would do. Maybe even Eric Dyer. Well, Eric Dyer is probably going to play in the middle because of his physicality. What does that do for Harry Winks? Does Harry Winks get pushed on a bit? Because Mourinho's going to look at him going, you can't be my protector. I know we have Claude Makélélé at Chelsea, but Makélélé is a bit more physical than...
But could Mourinho maybe change style a little bit here? Because if you think about it, he's got a squad that has been built by Daniel Levy for Mauricio Pochettino, where they've got a lot of players who play in a certain style. Definitely Tottenham have been largely based on getting their fullbacks up the pitch and just making the most of those front players, kind of front four or five players they have in the team. Could Mourinho say, right, well, I don't really have the players here to play that style now. It's unlikely we're going to sign players in January, so I work with what I have and I play in a similar style to what Spurs did last season.
Yeah, well, what Spurs did under Pochettino was they pressed. But they haven't been doing that this season. So that actually might suit Mourinho, because when he was in charge of United, they were always down near the bottom in terms of running stats. That's just the way they wanted to play.
It was a low pressing on the break, which United.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got players that can play in the break, the likes of Son and Kane. And Kane, one thing Kane's developed in the last few years is his ability to play a killer ball now. Obviously, he's a goal machine, but he can play in a more withdrawn role on a counter-attack if he has to. That it doesn't have to end with Harry Kane knocking the ball in the net. He has that ball that he can play. Lucas Moura suits that style. I don't know if Mourinho is going to go for him, but they've got players that can play in the break. So it'll be interesting to see. You just wonder, some of the things he said yesterday, you just know within a few weeks that'll just be gone out the window.
Mm.
And that's what he does. Like, he just, he charms you. You think it could be different. Yeah, sure. End is already...
He's ready to jump in, go on.
I'm not. I don't for one second believe that Jose Mourinho has changed in any way, especially his style of football.
And especially he has, though. He's
especially the manner of which he goes about things. We've had 14 years of this. He hasn't changed. But what has changed in this instance for Mourinho is that this squad was in the Champions League final last year. And I know they have had a few changes. I think Ndombele has come in and actually improved the squad.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Winks will be out the gap. He won't be in the starting team for Tottenham, I don't think. He might be this weekend, but as Mourinho starts to put his own stamp, I can't see Harry Winks having any future in a Mourinho Spurs team. But he's got a team full of ready-made stars. He's got Harry Kane, who's an out-and-out striker who will get you at least 20 to 25 goals a season. Son, who's a brilliant winger. Lucas Moura, Dele Alli, will probably see an improvement on him as well. And he's got a defensive setup that's as good as any in the Premier League top six. So,
assuming that they sign contracts and actually stay.
Yeah.
That is the real issue here.
He will have them until the end of the season, at least.
Yeah, but if they go on free transfers, they're available to negotiate with other clubs in January.
Yeah.
So how's that going to work in a Mourinho dressing room?
Something else, how's this going to work? Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho, to me, this is like oil and water. Well, this is not going to mix because Levy does not like a manager who comes in and gets demanding. He has always withheld a certain amount of control with Tottenham Hotspur as well. Like, is this Levy and the owners of Tottenham saying, right, we're going to give it one big push to try and win some trophies and therefore we're willing to kind of dance with the devil on this? Or what's the thinking from Tottenham's side bringing Mourinho in?
It's a match made in hell in that perspective. But I believe that Mourinho thinks that he has a squad capable of winning trophies already.
What kind of
and
trophies?
Well, they were in the Champions League final last year.
They
showed that they were capable of getting in the position of winning the biggest trophy in club football with this squad. And Mourinho's a serial winner. One or two changes could bring this squad to a major trophy. They finished second 2 years in a row and they got to a Champions League final. That is a squad that's good enough to win a major trophy.
They actually finished third that year. They pushed Leicester.
They finished second, third, and then second the following year. So
does Pochettino maybe raise the bar a bit too much here? Because
also as well, are they knackered?
Yeah, that's possible.
The way they play.
They're probably just fed up with Pochettino. It's 5 years.
So you bring in Jose Mourinho?
Yeah.
We've seen the bounce before.
I guarantee there'll be an improvement in the results. There can't not be. You can't go from, like, they've only won one away game all season.
Yeah.
So they'll win tomorrow. I fancy them to win against West Ham, and then looking at their fixtures, they're at home to Bournemouth next week, and they'll obviously play Olympiacos before that. So that'll be his first home game. They win that. The crowd are thinking, maybe this won't be so bad. They beat Bournemouth next week. That'll be three wins in a row. They go to Old Trafford then. And that's when, if he gets a result there, whether it's a draw or a win. If he gets a win, then Spurs fans are already on board.
Will he run down the touchline if they score a late goal?
Well, he's not as young as he once was. No. So,
before we talk the fixtures, though, is there sympathy here for Maurizio Pochettino? I know it's difficult to have sympathy for a guy who's pocketed £12 million, but when you see him at the whiteboard writing his message to the players saying that he didn't get a chance to say goodbye properly, given all that he's achieved over the last 5.5 seasons, do we feel for Pochettino a little bit here, Phil?
I understand that side of things where, you know, the human side of it, where he worked with these players for so long and he never got a chance to say, look, thanks for everything. Some of the players have thanked him. But in terms of his record in 2019, it's been terrible. Mm. And what is it, 25 points from 24 games, like relegation form. And the only thing that kept a bit of credit in the bank from was that brilliant run in the Champions League. And they were a different team in the Champions League. But looking at them this season, they haven't been good. The alarm bells are ringing when they're losing to Brighton 3-0, when they're losing 7-2 against Bayern, which a couple of seasons ago, they were the kind of games that Spurs could win. You know, they beat Real Madrid at home and they were getting used to
it. Was the lack of effort in that Bayern Munich
game? Yeah, it was just the way it all snowballed, and just conceding 7 goals against a team that a few weeks later sacked their manager because they're so dissatisfied with him. So it just wasn't working anymore. Unbelievable job. But I think Spurs felt now was the time to move. I did think the timing was a little bit strange because I thought he'd have the West Ham game. But let's be honest, if West Ham were playing the Pochettino Spurs or the Mourinho Spurs, which is a harder game for them?
Probably Mourinho Spurs.
Yeah. I think West Ham love playing Spurs. They really raise their game. They would have loved this weekend against Pochettino's team, thinking, if we beat them, like, he's going to get the sack. Mm. Now, Spurs are probably coming in a bit revitalised, and you've got a role reversal where you'd actually fear for Pellegrini. They're on a dismal run of form, which coincides with Fabianski being out.
Yeah. The goalkeeping issues are massive end of going into this, aren't they?
Terrible.
Yeah. I fancy Spurs to...
You saw him playing. Even that goal that he conceded in the game you entered, the Sheffield United goal, he should have saved it. He somehow made it look harder to not save it than it was to save.
Yeah, but apart from that, I know it's the goalkeeping issues, but they have issues all over the field in terms of just the killer instinct. That's the one thing I noticed when I saw them against Sheffield United was they got into the box, they didn't know what to do. Hallar was pulling off, and then he was in, and then he just looked like a centre forward who was lacking in confidence and didn't know what to do with himself. And that's probably the case with a lot of these West Ham players.
I think all three of us are sick. We didn't back the What Odds Paddy last time round. We talked at length about a top six manager losing their job during the international break. Certainly, I wouldn't have had Pochettino down as the one who would out of the six.
No, though. That's what I thought he'd get this game. But, you know, there was rumours that's doing the rounds last week where he had held talks and this was seen as a crunch game for him, but he never actually got it. So what happened in the last few days, we don't know. But obviously, it's been on the cards because Mourinho was lined up. The fact that there was less than 12 hours between both statements.
Well, what's amazing, and I love the fact that Daniel Levy asked him to resign. Of course he's not going to resign and give up 12 million after what he's done for the club. It just sums Daniel Levy up, really.
And Harry Redknapp, I thought, was quite interesting during the week as well. He said that when he left the club, again, after bringing them to the last eight of the Champions League, he had heard rumours around the club that people were being interviewed or sought out while he was still the manager of the club. So it's not the first time that this has happened. So in terms of predictions for tomorrow lunchtime then, Andy, you've said you're expecting Spurs win?
Yeah, 3-1.
Phil?
Yeah, I can see Spurs winning comfortably and everyone's thinking Jose's back.
Mm. City against Chelsea then, Phil. A little bit of pressure on City given the situation at the top of the table at the moment. Not the ideal fixture to come off an international break for them.
Yeah, but do you know what? Chelsea are getting a lot of plaudits, and rightly so, because they're on a great run. They've won 6 league games in a row since they lost to Liverpool. And, you know, they gave Liverpool problems in that game. But they've beaten Palace, Watford, Burnley, Newcastle, Southampton and Brighton. Their games they'd be expected to win. So from what I've seen of Chelsea this season, that when it comes to the really big games, they're going to be that little bit short, and I expect the same tomorrow. I think, look, City won this fixture 6-0 last season. I think it's going to be that straightforward because the tactics Sarri employed last season just left them open, and you know, he was under pressure at the time. Lampard, there's a good feel in there. They'll cause City problems at times, but I just think it's a game City will win, and they need to win because they're already giving up ground to Liverpool. They just have that look about them where they can, they're still going to win a lot of games, but they don't look capable of going on that long run of consecutive wins like they did last season. And you're just looking at the City fixture. So after that, they're away to Newcastle and Burnley. Lost to Newcastle last season. Mm-hmm. Burnley, they got a narrow 1-0 win, but that's when there was a lot of tension, there was a lot on the at stake in those games. Then they have the Manchester Derby at the Etihad, then they play Arsenal away and they've Leicester at home. So the next few weeks, tough enough for City. If they got through, and then after the Leicester game, they've Wolves away. Obviously, Wolves have beaten them. If they won all those games, then I'd be thinking, right, maybe City are the team to beat still. I can't imagine City just tailing off. I just can't see that happening.
Well, if you are thinking of having a bet on this game this weekend, or Paddy Power special odds, Paddy Power are offering money back as a free bet on all markets on this game if Man City beat Chelsea. Now, there's a maximum bet of €10 on that, and terms and conditions apply. But obviously, our sponsors are thinking that Man City are going to beat Chelsea. Aranda, how do you call it?
I would say City are probably going to win this comfortably enough. It might not be as high scoring as a lot of people might imagine between, I don't know why, but people always think that these big teams are going to go up and score 3 or 4 goals against each other. It's always, or it's almost always, the complete opposite. Chelsea's record against the top six this year, lost 4-0 to Man United. Can't really read too much into that.
Are United top six, are they?
Well,
they,
at that stage they
big
were.
Big six.
Big six.
Big six.
Okay.
Drew 1-1 to Leicester, lost 2-1 to Liverpool, and lost 2-1 to United, who were outside of the top six at that stage in the League Cup.
Yeah, but that was the United first team against the Chelsea reserves.
Yeah, you can't read too much into those results, but against the bigger sides this year, they have been a little bit tighter, a little bit more defensive-minded because they know that they are a little bit weaker in the back. But in the last couple of weeks, Chelsea have been really impressive. They haven't been as naive as they looked at the start of the season, and Frank Lampard might be looking at this Man City out of form a little bit as a chance to really cement himself as one of the top managers in the league.
If Chelsea do pick up loose balls, they definitely have the tools to hurt City, because if you get at that City defence, you're going to cause some problems. Like, you even just think 20 minutes at Anfield on the clock and they were 2-0 down and City had played all the football.
Yeah.
and Liverpool just sat in and...
I think against the good teams, City's possession can't protect them enough.
No, absolutely. And this is why they don't go to the final or the semi-finals of the Champions League under Guardiola. Because if they do cough up possession, they are just there to be attacked. Yeah. And Chelsea have the players that can do the damage. But I also wonder, will Chelsea be able to cope with the attacking threat of City? I actually think there'll be plenty of goals in this one.
Okay, very quick race around the rest of the fixtures. Can we just do the what adds, Paddy, before we finish as well? And your take on Crystal Palace against Liverpool?
Should be an easy enough result for Liverpool. Just the form that they're in at this stage, they don't look like they're slowing down at any point this season. So I would fancy Liverpool in this. Every time Crystal Palace are much better, much improved this season, but every time we say,
I think they
fancy a result
here. I think tomorrow's
actually
the one where they're going to do something.
Mm. Phil, our live game on Sunday and Off the Ball, the battle of the United, Sheffield United and Manchester United.
Oh yeah, a lot of history behind this one. First ever Premier League goal scored in this fixture, Brian Dean, 1992, and I wasn't born.
I wasn't even joking. Sounds like a joke, but I wasn't
even joking, by the way, I knew that. But I think this is actually a good game for United. It's not an easy place to get a result, but a couple of things going in United's favour. Dean Henderson's on loan from United, can't play for Sheffield United. So you've got Simon Moore to start in goal, first start since May 2018 in the league. John Egan's a doubt. Now, Chris Wilder said he has a chance. They're going to leave it to the last minute. If he doesn't play, Phil Jagielka plays. So there are a couple of changes that could certainly go in United's favour, because Sheffield United have named the same back six for every league game this season. So it would be interesting to see how they'd cope without two of that back six. Definitely, we know they're going to be without one, but if they were without two, I think it'll work in United's favour.
We're into Klopp time. So the what odds, Paddy, for this weekend are very much based around Jose Mourinho and Spurs. I'll get your thoughts, almost a very quick take on each. Spurs to finish above Man United, 4-6. A lot of ground to pick up here.
No, I think Spurs will finish ahead of United.
Yeah, they have the squad.
Okay, need a good run for that. Mourinho to sign Zlatan. He's been linked with Milan as well, but heavily linked with Spurs in the papers today.
Said it during the week. The lads laughed at me. They thought I was joking. I was like, no, he will sign him.
6-4, Enda, would you put some of your own money on it?
I don't see the point, but I'll go with a yes.
Poor Troy Parrott. And Tottenham to win a major trophy in the 1920 season is 11-2.
What's major?
Presume League Cup and up. Yeah, I've got to count the League Cup as
well. Well, they're out of the League Cup.
Oh, well, FA Cup or the Champions League?
They could win the FA Cup this season. They'll definitely win the League Cup next season.
Okay.
Mourinho, that's the first trophy he ever won in
He loves
the League Cup.
11-2 ended for something to happen this season. Has to be FA Cup or Champions League.
I'd fancy them in the FA Cup.
I think they'll do well in the Champions League. They'll get to the knockout stages, and Mourinho will just grind out results. It depends obviously who they get, who they draw. But if they get a kind of B-level team, not one of the really big guns, you know, they could get to a quarter-final, and you never know.
And think about last season's Champions League. Tottenham got by on the skin of their teeth last season. They got a result in the Nou Camp on the final day of the group stage.
And Inter helped them out as well.
Yeah, so, and again, the Ajax game in the semi-final just about got through that. So they have a good chance of doing something semi-final, at least in the Champions League.
Gentlemen, much like Mauricio Pochettino, the sands of time have beaten us on this week's Paddy Power Half Hour. Thanks a million for joining us. Hopefully you can join us from noon next Friday. Thank you.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.